Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, which is available for subscription at pwtorch.com/papercopy. Find out about home delivery of the weekly newsletter and get on board as we approach issue number 1500 in 2017. My weekly cover story, end notes, comments on a big topic of the week, or random thoughts on a lot of stuff. My reports on Raw and SmackDown, newsletter-exclusive columns from Bruce Mitchell and Greg Parks, roundtable reviews, pay-per-view reports with star ratings, and so much more, including news, every week in the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter. Home delivery available at pwtorch.com/papercopy. This is the Monday night post-Raw edition of the PW Torch livecast. Thank you so much for joining me today, and I will be joined momentarily by PWTorch.com contributor Joel Dennell. And he is the author of the Lucha Underground Weekly Report. And he was on the show once before, I think a couple months back. It feels like it was around a NXT event right after the Vikings made their debut in their new stadium. Yep, that's what happened. And we're going to try to avoid talking about Minnesota sports, because what an awful week it's been for the three active sports teams. But we will be talking about the hype tonight on Raw at Survivor Series. And we're going to get to phone calls quickly also. So get in line quick. We want to get your thoughts on tonight's show. It was a pre-taped show. They taped it earlier in the day in Glasgow, Scotland. And the crowd, again, made themselves part of the story. But mostly this was a show meant to cement in people's minds who is fighting whom at Survivor Series. Now, Brock Lesnar and Goldberg were not there, but they did video features hyping that. They had an appearance from Stephanie, a few appearances from her, but mostly it was a bunch of people from various Raw teams standing in the ring, arguing, trying to figure out how to get on the same page, and then facing each other. We also had one other ramification on Raw tonight, that being Sami Zayn pinning Rusev to the Intercontinental title shot against Dolph Ziggler at Survivor Series. It was a show that maybe, if it's going to be remembered for anything, it was a night that they really put Braun Strowman over big. And then in the end, Kevin Owens accidentally got Superman punched on top of Jericho in a fatal five-way match, and got a pin on his own best friend and co-holder of the WWE Universal Championship. So that's a highlight of some of the stuff that happened on Raw. We'll certainly get into more. Sasha Banks officially announced as the final partner in the women's team Raw. And we also had Shining Stars beating Goldust and R-Truth to solidify that they will be in on Team Raw at Survivor Series also. So our phone number here is 515-605-9345. Before I get to Joel, just want to give a plug that last Thursday, I've had great listenership so far, but if you missed it, you're going to want to catch up on it over at pwtorchlivecast.com, our home site for this show. Every show listed there, easy access to archives, our RSS feed, and you can listen on demand or download shows and find them by day, by host, by category. That's pwtorchlivecast.com, or on our RSS feed if you subscribe to this show on your smartphone or iTunes. Scroll back to last Thursday, because not only was Gabe Sapolsky my guest, the booker, creative director, and I gave him a new job title, which you got to listen to here. It's kind of fun, for the World Wrestling Network's Evolve and other brands. He was on for the first half hour to talk about Flow Slam and that new streaming service that they're signed to. And that's informative. If you're curious about this, the whole Flow Slam announcement and where things are going, it was great to get Gabe on to talk about that for 30 minutes. And then for the next 75 or 80 minutes, Stone Cold Steve Austin joined me live. We didn't take calls. I don't think we took emails either. Or maybe we did take a couple emails, but we just talked about the state of the industry. Talked about his reality show that debuts a week from Sunday on CMT, the latest season of that, and also Broken Skull Challenge, by the way, and also talked about whether he'll come back at WrestleMania now that he's watched Goldberg's comeback. He also critiqued Goldberg, the push of Seth Rollins, and so much more. It's a must-listen show. So if you did not listen to that yet, I am assigning you that task, and you'll thank me after listening. It was a really good episode. All right, let's bring Joel onto the program and welcome today's co-host. Joel, welcome back to the live cast.
Thanks for having me, Wade. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. Can you speak up a little bit? You're coming in a little soft on my microphone. I'm going to adjust mine too, so maybe it's me, but do your best to talk into the mic so everybody can hear you live here. Tonight's show, Joel, it's a pre-taped show, so I always brace for it feeling phoned in, or they just throw a bunch of matches out there to fill time. There's something about those overseas shows where the pattern is such where you don't look forward to it as being real newsworthy. How did this fit that pattern or break from it?
It was the same pattern of the pre-tape show where everything just kind of feels very scripted and just kind of feels like the guys don't even want to be there. They're just kind of going through the motions almost. It felt that way in the first promo of the show where they're trying to get over the SmackDown versus Raw feud for going into Survivor Series. And it just feels so contrived and feels so scripted. And it just felt like everybody who was out there was kind of like, oh God, I don't even want to be here right now. So, I mean, that just kind of set the tone for the rest of it. And, you know, in the first hour or so, we only had two matches, and the fans then started to take over during the women's segment, and the fans were getting a little restless because they could tell, you know, this is just kind of going through the motions. It's the typical overseas pre-tape show.
Yes, the contrived, rehearsed, memorized, that came up multiple times. I mean, the pop culture references, mm-hmm. like Charlotte and her Lindsay Lohan reference.
Oh, God.
Even Seth Rollins, where he said, oh, another person doesn't like me. You know, sounds like a party. I mean, there's just lines that are just so rehearsed and memorized sounding. There's no authenticity. And, I mean, I going way back to when I was first a fan, the AWA was known as an interview territory. And if you go on YouTube and you look up some of the old AWA shows that are on YouTube, and you just go to the interviews, you know, Mean Gene Okerlund, when he was good, like really good, I think, for me as a young kid watching. I know people who grew up with Marty O'Neill, his predecessor didn't like Mean Gene, and I kind of get it looking back on it. But Mean Gene was, I thought, really good interviewing the wrestlers in the AWA. Greg Gagne, the son of the promoter, Vern Gagne, really took pride in the way that they produced promos, in that they would they bring wrestlers in and produce them in a way where they got to know their personality. Often they came in as polished acts, but they gave them a chance to express themselves. And they did so in a way that felt authentic. It caught my attention. It was Jesse Ventura at his absolute peak when he was an active wrestler. And the whole range of promos from Mad Dog Vachon to Vern Gagne were there. And what I loved about it and what caught my eye wasn't that it was, quote, entertaining. It wasn't that it was funny. It's that it felt real. Even though as a kid, I knew there was skepticism about its authenticity, even back then when it looked a lot more real than today. And then Goldberg came back a couple of weeks ago. Steve Austin and I talked about this last Thursday on this show. He felt authentic. It felt genuine. It felt that his words were being made up as he spoke them, not regurgitated from memorizing a script all day. And I wrote this in my Raw report at pwtorch.com tonight covering Raw Live. Did they learn nothing from that? I mean, there was one of the reasons Goldberg got over, Joel, is that promo felt so authentic. And I'm with you, and I wanted to underline your point there. I didn't feel there were many authentic moments on this show. It's not to say that there weren't aspects I didn't enjoy, but it was despite feeling rehearsed, not because anything felt genuine or extemporaneous or unplanned. And it really does hurt the product.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, I self-admittedly, I don't watch Raw all the way through every single week because it's hard to get through. Because it just feels so scripted. Every line, I don't remember who said it, but someone's bringing up Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, and it's just kind of like, oh, that's the check mark on the,
Alicia,
you know,
Fox,
the pop,
yeah,
culture reference. Yeah. And I mean, it's just, it's so hard to watch when you just kind of know those are the little points that they have to hit, you know, during every segment. And I mean, I was listening to Chris Jericho's podcast a little bit earlier today with Alice Cooper, and Alice said something, you know, that was kind of interesting that about rock and roll stars and comparing it to wrestlers, that, you know, way back when with the rock and roll stars, there was more outlaws, you know, guys, you didn't know what they were going to do. And with wrestlers today, there's no one who feels like an outlaw. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nobody who stands up for themselves, and, you know, you don't know what they're going to do. Who's that, just that badass type character, where it's like Stephanie has all these different wrestlers in the ring with her, and they're all kind of like, oh yeah, Stephanie, I guess we'll just do what you say or we'll lose our jobs. So we have to figure out a way to do this. And it's just like, it's just a bunch of crap. You know, I don't know why anyone would want to watch that, where I want to see guys who, you know, she's saying, well, if you don't win the match, you're all going to lose your job. It's kind of like, well, you know, I just don't want to see that, you know, about guys who are just going to lose their jobs if they lose a match. It's just not cool, you know. I don't know.
No, you're right. Outlaw. I think bringing up rock stars and comparing it to pro wrestling is a great comparison. And I think one of the things that people loved about pro wrestling in previous generations was the sense that they were watching outlaws who could barely be herded by the promoters. And it is completely flipped to this corporate hierarchy where you've got people in charge, mm-hmm. and the wrestlers are cowering to them and their power. And we saw it with Daniel Bryan. We saw it with Big Show a couple years back during that whole thing. And we saw it with the Cruiserweights and the Cruiserweight Classic introduction. I harp on this because I mean, I understand why they were telling the story, but they're making it too much like they're treating the Cruiserweights in the Cruiserweight introduction special like they treat American Idol contestants on the intro show. Nobodies who are being given a chance to become somebodies. And it's a nice reality TV storyline when that's true. But I don't think that when you look at the resume of Cruiserweights and you're introducing a new division, that you should introduce them to the WWE universe as being losers who sleep on each other's floors and in the back of Volkswagen vans like hippies and can barely function if Triple H wasn't the guy who saw their greatness and gave them a chance. So it permeates a lot of parts of the product, and it is a problem. At some point, you want to feel like the wrestlers are outlaws and they're not kowtowing. We're going to go to our first break. We're going to come back and go into calls. Joel Dennell is my co-host here on the Raw Post Edition, the post-Raw edition of the PW Torch livecast. I'm Wade Keller. It's Monday, November 7th. We are live. Of course, you can hear this show on demand also. UFC 205 is coming up Saturday. You are going to want to read MMATorch.com every single day for tons of coverage leading up to the event and in the days that follow the event. It is potentially the biggest UFC event of all time. Conor McGregor, Eddie Alvarez, only one of many, many big-time matches MMA fans are looking forward to on Saturday. Here are some details on our sister site, our sister brand, MMATorch.com. While you're listening to this ad, follow us on Twitter at MMATorch. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. We are back, and thank you for joining us today on the PW Torch livecast. Our phone number is 515-605-9345. We're on the lookout for first-time callers. So if you are new to the show, please call us right now, and we'll move you ahead in line on the switchboard. You can also, when you call, be sure to push 1 on your touchtone phone to indicate that you do want to participate in the show. Otherwise, you'll stay in the standby queue. Let's go to our first caller on the show, Jackie from Jacksonville, Florida. You're on with me and today's co-host, Joel Dennell. What have you got for us today?
What's up? Well, mainly, I didn't watch Monday Night Raw, but I got a question for you. This is a little bit off topic, but who y'all think going to win that election for? Because I know damn well I ain't voting for no Donald Trump, yo.
All right, Jackie, we're going to make this a politics-free zone for those who are trying to escape it. So we are going to thank you for your call, but we're going to move on to people who did see tonight's Raw, unless you have a wrestling question that isn't related to Raw that we can touch on first.
Hold on, yo. Hello?
Yep.
Actually, I do got a wrestling question real quick.
All right, well then, hit us up with that one. I think a lot of people listening have political opinions, but I bet a lot of people are listening to this Monday night or Tuesday afternoon, kind of thinking it'd be nice to get away from it for a few minutes. So we're gonna do that.
Well, anyway, check it out. Even though I didn't even watch Raw, but I did see like something on YouTube about they chose Seth Rollins as a part of their team for Survivor Series. I'm like, my whole thing is, who going to be on the Raw and SmackDown team for Survivor Series? Even though I'm going to watch the pay-per-view on Sunday. Is the pay-per-view even this Sunday or is it next Sunday? I'm confused.
The pay-per-view, Jackie, is a week from Sunday. Raw covered all of your questions, so we're just going to move on and go to – come on, people, give us a call. 515-605-9345. That's set the base. Let's improve on that. 111 International or Skype, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Wade. It's Sean from St. Albert, Canada.
From where in Canada?
From St. Albert, Alberta.
Cool. The phone line just went out briefly.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you got for us?
No, it's okay. I was just going to say a couple things. It's nice to see that when you think Raw can't get any worse, they top themselves with tonight's show, like making sure to remind you that we have no stars, that the only star is a McMahon or a couple of McMahons. So that's a good reminder. And I was just wondering, has Kevin Dunn ever managed to get Bailey's entrance correctly yet with his shots?
Oh,
it seems that ever since she's come up, he has managed to like butcher it one way or another. So I was just wondering if that's just his style, or if he is, that's his way to like sabotage Bailey.
I would hope he's not trying to sabotage Bailey. That said, there are things that are created, Sean, outside of WWE on the main roster that the people on the main roster don't always get 100% behind promoting. Heck, that was the case 15 years ago with WCW and, you know, things that worked in WCW that they didn't really want to put over on Raw because it wasn't their creation. Joel, do you have a grade for how they're handling Bailey ring entrance and otherwise so far compared to her NXT work?
Of course, she was a lot better in NXT. They kind of had a better sense of her character down there. I mean, we just need to see more development on the main roster. Tonight, I think, was an improvement with her getting the win. As far as the entrance goes, I work with a lot of people who do live event directing and stuff like that. And the fact that Kevin Dunn can't get it correctly and get the shots correctly, there is definitely something going on with that because it's not something that's difficult to figure out after you've done it once or twice. It should be routine. A lot of that directing and stuff of doing live events is pretty much routine where the camera guys know where they're supposed to be for what shots and what angles. So it's definitely them just not either figuring it out and putting the time into thinking about where they need to be, or there is something more going on, but I would like to think that it's probably just they haven't really thought it out because they're, I don't know, for one reason or another, they have other stuff on their mind and they haven't really thought about, hey, how are we going to shoot Bailey's entrance? But being someone like Kevin Dunn, who's been doing this for years, you would think that he'd be able to figure it out.
I'll give them a little slack in that they were in a different setting tonight. I love the arena, by the way. It was both like retro and modern at the same time. The architecture on the outside was cool. I love that it just visually looked different than all the relatively generic looking American based hockey and basketball arenas that Raw usually takes place in. I always like when it feels mm-hmm. different. You know, that's what I liked about Hartford. Hartford felt like this old school Bloomington Met Sports Center, like old NHL building where the Whalers played. And it looked different. And this was a cool setting and it looked different. They chose some different camera angles. I love that when Chris Jericho's entrance took place early in the show, they were on the floor, but way opposite of the stage. So they showed the fans all from behind raising their arms in the air as soon as Jericho's music hit, like a rock star was coming out. I mean, it was speaking of rock stars. It was a rock star reaction. And then they go to the upper deck and aim down at the stage from stage left, and Roman Reigns' music plays, and the crowd boos, and I rewound twice. I didn't see one hand go up in excitement, not one arm. Everybody just sat there and booed, but nobody was excited. There wasn't a kid or a woman who, you know, like nobody. It was just, it was such a contrast. I don't think that's what Kevin Dunn was going for, because I think he's on Team Roman with Vince. That said, I give Kevin credit if we're going to go on a hard time for Bailey. Who knows if it was his idea or what, but I like the camera angles that they used to take into account that they were in a different type of arena than usual.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like you were just saying, the different camera angles, all that stuff is planned out beforehand. So that's why it's kind of interesting to me that they can't figure out that entrance, because all these other shots of these wide angle shots, they're all planned out before the show. But, you know, like you're saying about the different venues and stuff like that, you know, it does give it a really different feel. And I really appreciate that. And one of the things I miss about watching pay-per-views way back when is how they would actually have different stages and stuff. And I know WWE thinks it doesn't make a difference or whatever, but to me, it made it feel a little bit more special, because the stage doesn't look like the generic, you know, LED staging that they have for every show. So, you know, even just changing up the staging a little bit, but I do like the different kinds of venues, you know, just giving it a little bit different feel than every other, you know, typical basketball or hockey arena looks all the same in the United States. It just gives it a little bit different and a nicer feel.
Where are you on the European crowds, Joel, and what they did? I thought, I'm not trying to load up the question here, but I thought that they were most prominent, I'll say, neutrally during the women's segment. And I don't think that the women handled it well. I think they made the situation worse. And that segment just dragged to a halt.
Yeah, I think they were just tired of these long promo segments, because what was that, the third one in the show by that point? That it was just kind of adding up after a while that we see, oh my God, just another Survivor Series team explaining how are we going to figure out how we're going to work together to be on this team, and oh no, but I don't like you, but for some reason we need to beat SmackDown even though there's nothing at stake. You know, so I think they were just tired of seeing these long promos that basically all had the same premise, the same idea, but they didn't handle it well. I mean, Sasha got them to be quiet for a little bit because she finished the song for him, which that's what they wanted to hear. You know, the whatever the song is called, I don't know, the Hey Lady song or whatever. But it felt like, you know, because they have a script that they stick to and they have certain cues, that when something else happens that they're not expecting to, you know, they're kind of thrown off a little bit. And they haven't been given these long promos where they're all together in the ring like that many times before. So when something that goes a little bit off script, it's a little bit difficult for them to deal with, because they know, hey, we have to stick word for word of the script or they're going to be upset backstage.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because I think what happens is when there is an interruption in the flow and something unexpected happens, what they're thinking about, okay, how do I react? But you can also tell they're thinking about, will Vince McMahon be mad? And how do I wind myself back to where I was? And how do I even, I have to be sure to remember where we left off. This could be a disaster. We're live. And it just takes so much of the fun out of it. And then the other thing is these, and I think you kind of touched on this, they don't have a lot of practice in this regard. I mean, and that's why house shows are fun, and or one of the aspects of house shows that's more fun than going to a Raw or SmackDown is that, not always, because a lot of times they're just going through the motions, but sometimes you get the feeling, and who was it that was interviewed about this? I'm trying to think. Somebody did an interview and talked about what fun the house shows are, because everybody gets to loosen up a little bit. They don't have the time cues and Vince McMahon looking over their shoulder and that kind of thing, and they can improvise a little more. But they don't even do enough of that at house shows, on, you know, in terms of mic work especially, to prepare for moments like this. I just thought, I mean, Charlotte, I know she was, you know, trying to, you know, work the crowd into her routine and kind of heal on them. But if you cross your arms and wait them out, they're going to sing forever. That's not going to get them to stop. You just need to talk your way through it. I also know it's easy for us to say watching on TV. I'm sure that building was way louder and completely throwing them off, but they just have to talk through it. And it was not a good thing. And it felt to me like they might have cut away from the segment sooner than they planned, too, because it just ended awkwardly when Bayley and Nia Jax just kind of butted up against each other, and they're just like, all right, we're going to go.
Yeah, it did feel like, you know, because sometimes at the end of when they tape shows, they have announcers do little bits where they record audio, you know, just quickly go to break and stuff,
yeah,
so that they can use it when they're cutting up the show later. And that's what it felt like, is that they inserted Michael Cole being like, and we'll be back, you know, just because it was like a really sudden fade to a commercial. There was something else I was going to say that you know, that's the advantage that guys like Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins have, is that they have experience with people in the crowd that are heckling them or chanting different things from being on the indie scene, that they're able to improvise, you know. And Kevin Owens was great at that. He could work some of that stuff into his match. I remember there was a show at in Hopkins that I was at. And, you know, there was a group of guys in the front row who was heckling him, and he was just kind of working it into the match, you know, and he was still staying in character and just kind of playing off of those people. And, you know, that's some of the experience that he has from being out there, you know, being on the indie scene versus people who are in the protected WWE environment where they don't really teach them how to improvise and do things like that. They're just taught to work from that script, and you do not divert from the script.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good example. Kevin Owens is great, and the indie scene is so valuable for guys. I mean, it just is. Cody Rhodes is going to end up a better wrestler. You can grow up the son of a famous wrestler and not have those improvising skills. Look at Randy Orton. You know, I mean, I don't know what Randy would do if he had to improvise on the microphone. I mean, so it's just the indie scene can be invaluable, and it would be good for NXT to work that into their training, too. All right, our phone number here is 515-605-9345. Get on the phone banks right now. Let's talk about Raw. That's 515-605-9345. Up next, area code 516. 516, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
How you doing? This is Darnell from New York.
Hey, Darnell. Thanks for calling. What have you got for Joel and me today?
I have two things. My first question was, I remember, if my memory serves me correctly, that when they first did the brand split, the first time, the champion and the women's champion went from, they were on both shows. They were on SmackDown and Raw. Do you all think that the brand split would have worked better if they allowed the champion to go to from each show? And
Joel, what,
my
oh,
second,
yeah, go ahead.
Ahead.
No, go ahead.
My second question is, where do you all see The Undertaker fitting into the landscape of, I guess, the company now? Because I've seen some reports that says he's on SmackDown. He's going to be on SmackDown. And then I've seen something that said he's going to make like an appearance, I guess, on like a SmackDown or maybe even at Survivor Series. Do you think maybe he shows up at Survivor Series or he'll show up sometime soon?
Okay. Good.
And that's all.
Thanks, Darnell. I appreciate it. Joel, the floating champion, what do you think of that? I think that's what Darnell was getting at.
Yeah. You know, it would depend on how it was done, but I'm in favor of having less championships than more, just because I think that if you have more, it kind of devalues both of them by having so many of them there. I mean, I was looking at the roster page the other day, and it's just crazy to look at how many champions they have on there now. It's kind of like, wow, almost everyone's holding a belt. But, you know, I would be in favor of a world champion, the WWE champion going in between Raw or SmackDown. And, you know, they have their home brand that they stay on either Raw or SmackDown, and they just kind of float between the two of them, building up contenders through both brands. As for like the women's title, I probably would have kept just one women's champion on one brand. Just have it, keep it on Raw because you need to fill up more time on Raw. Just keep that there. And then for the tag champions, you know, it's, it feels really spread out having all these tag champions, you know, trying to get Cesaro and Sheamus in the mix, you know, involving all these other teams, just having one tag champion. So I think that you could have some a couple floating championships. I would probably just keep it as the world title and then maybe, you know, United States or Intercontinental, but keep most of that stuff exclusive to the brand, because that way when that person does fight somebody else from the other brand, it means a lot more, which is completely contradictory to the whole idea of Survivor Series this year, which is we were led to believe that we're going to split up the brands and now everyone's just going to wrestle each other on one show, giving away all these matchups that could be used down the line. So definitely not in favor of Survivor Series idea, but I think you could get away with doing some floating champions.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too late for it now, but I think we saw a taste of it tonight with the match with Rusev and Sammy fighting for a chance at the Intercontinental Champion. If they had one secondary title and one world title and they floated, but the wrestler had a home base, as you mentioned, you could have Dolph Ziggler, home base SmackDown, IC champ, but once a month, he's got to go to Raw on a pay-per-view or a TV show and defend the belt. Once a month, he's got to defend it on the other brand. And you have a storyline built in, a sports-like storyline with a sports vibe about how wrestlers on Raw are fighting to earn a shot at a championship. And it's a championship that matters because there aren't so many of them. No, absolutely. I think there's absolutely something to be said for that. I was watching the New Day match against Anderson and Gallows, and they're out there in their Braveheart outfits, and Big E is spanking Gallows to the New Day Sucks chant. And I'm watching that, and I'm like, you know, they look at the crowd, and they're getting a kick out of it, and they think they're doing a good job because the crowd's like, yeah, that's funny. But it undercuts any kind of immersive investment that I have in thinking or kind of being invested in what's happening, like it's a fight. When you have that kind of sports entertainment-y stuff happening, it's just, you can't take it seriously. And I think wrestling works better when that kind of thing is an exception. It's a novelty, but it's not the rule. And it's just New Day. They're talented. When they come out, I'm like, what are they going to do this week? But they don't, and they weren't able to do this with the Wyatt family storyline. You know, they kind of ran into a ceiling in terms of how seriously they could act. I mean, I think Kofi acted serious for like 8 seconds and that was it. And I was like, wow, I was really happy for 8 seconds. Kofi's taking this seriously. And then boom, they were right off into the sports entertainment-y aspect of what they do again, which is entertaining. I look forward to it most of the time. Sometimes they flop, sometimes they don't, but that's part of the charm. But I don't take what they do seriously. And I don't take their matches seriously because nothing they do feels serious. And again, I point at it again. Steve Austin and I talked a lot about that last Thursday. The frivolity and the lack of seriousness undercuts the ability to tell world title storylines. And I would argue, besides super fights like Goldberg, Lesnar, Cena, Rock, although that had a belt at stake also, other than those rare super fights, having a sports-like feel that is preserved and protected at the top of the card is essential. Otherwise, there's this big headwind that WWE needlessly creates when they put these guys out there and you have your champions. And as you say, almost everybody's a champion, slightly exaggerating there, but there's so many champions in so many segments, it's hard to avoid it. But yeah, it's just at some point, it just does it. It feels like the writers and Vince McMahon's approach and everybody, it's like this is one big Saturday Night Live variety show where some people happen to go in and pretend to fight every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, like, going back to what you're saying about, like, seriousness of, like, main events, where a lot of people have been saying, you know, this is some of Chris Jericho's best work that he's been doing, you know, for a long time. And I would tend to disagree with that because, yes, it is entertaining. And, you know, I get a kick out of the list and who's on the list and how ridiculous is it going to look this week. But in a main event setting, I mean, it just, you know, devalues the title and Chris Jericho's character and being associated with Kevin Owens. I mean, just because it's so funny, haha, that, you know, it has no place in being in the main event picture. So I just think that there's too much, you know, funny. We're just all having a good time. This is entertainment. And especially you saw it this week with the New Day dressing up as the Highlander Braveheart type thing, because it's, oh, this doesn't matter. We're overseas. You know, none of this stuff really matters. We're just going to have a couple matches. This is going to be a maintenance show. So
we
thinking,
have to keep people
oh,
entertained. God knows we're not going to be entertained by wrestling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, the people, they don't listen to the crowd, and the crowd was taking over the women's promo segment because they want, you know, good wrestling matches. They had waited all these years to get Monday Night Raw, and they finally do, and it's a bunch of long promos, and you get Golden Truth versus the Shining Stars. I mean, like, really? Seriously, these people are paying a lot of money to go to the show. Like, I had messaged you, you know, a couple weeks ago about going to Monday Night Raw, and it's like, you know, like how much money they charge to go to their shows, and they're just not that good. They're very long. You know, you get a couple matches here and there. You get a pretty decent main event, but the rest of the stuff is just filler. It's not worth my time and money to go to these shows, and especially in Scotland, these people, you know, have been waiting for such a long time to go to a big event like this, and then to just get, you know, that maintenance kind of show where it's just, you know, like I said, a bunch of promos, a couple short matches, an okay main event that really doesn't make any sense storyline-wise. You know, it's just kind of ridiculous.
All right, we're going to tackle the Undertaker topic after this break. We got to take our bottom of the hour break, our 30-minute break, as usual, a few minutes late on that. But we'll be right back after this word from our sponsor. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. By the way, if you haven't yet, you can check out my full detailed report on tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw at pwtorch.com. And right next to it, as I speak, we have my 20 years ago WWE Monday Night Raw report with a Bret Hart, Steve Austin segment, Shawn Michaels, British Bulldog, Double J, Jeff Jarrett, Farouk, a friend of the live cast, Aldo Montoya, a.k.a. Justin Credible, PJ Polacco, also on that show. And we also have a 20 years ago story on Kurt Hennig blindsiding the WWF and heading to WCW. WCW responds to losing the Bret Hart sweepstakes a year before they would re-win it, I guess, by stealing Mr. Perfect, who we get into the details on that in the cover story that I wrote 20 years ago on how he almost debuted as soon as that week's show, which would have been a more embarrassing blindside for the WWF. So some interesting flashbacks on pwtorch.com. In addition to our current coverage, we got house show results of WWE's tour of Europe. We have interview highlights from Bayley, including her thoughts on how she had to stay back in NXT longer than the other four horsewomen and how she feels about that. And lots of other good stuff. So check it out. pwtorch.com, exclusive features, flashbacks, and more. Let's go back to the live cast and back to our conversation with Joel Dennell, PW Torch contributor, and also our callers. Our phone number is 515-605-9345. We're going to table our Undertaker discussion until we go to our next call, so we don't have a long wait for some of the people who've been on hold a while. Up next, 312. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Yes, I'm Sean.
Yep.
Sorry, it's weird being on this end of it. I got a few.
What city are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chico, California, but I kept my 312 area code.
Yeah, go ahead. What's your question or comment for Joel and me?
Okay. Well, I got a few. I'll run through them really, really quickly.
Okay.
Those are. Roman Reigns still getting his push. It was a month after the brand split that he still opened and closed Raw, and he's still in the title picture and in the title scene with the Universal Champion at all times. And I can see that push, and they're still trying to do that, and they're still trying to get him over. Also, the TV, I think there should be a TV championship. John Cena was doing some great things with that open challenge every week, and that was basically a television championship that I think they should just have. Rid of the U.S. title and have a TV champion that has to defend every week. That way you get something out of that every week. I'm okay with the multiple championships also. I think to keep the women doing something, that should be a secondary title, kind of like an intercontinental championship, because there's just nothing for them to do unless you're going for that one championship. Also, there's so much talent on each show that you can't have AJ Styles be champ and Kevin Owens, but they both deserve it. So I'm okay with the multiple championships, because even when they did it back in the day, you had multiple champions that deserved it. Undertaker and Cena and Edge, Cena, whoever. Also, the WWE is manufacturing its own competition with brand split, but it forgot to be different. Like, SmackDown's different from Raw, but it still feels like the same product, and it hasn't gotten away from itself. And lastly, I kind of blame it all on the World Wildlife Fund, because they didn't need that F. They didn't need to be the WWF. And that kind of ruined everything, because when it switched from being a federation, it was just all entertainment, and that's all everyone cared about. Although it was going to be that anyway, and ran through everything. That's it. That's all I got.
All right. Thanks, Sean. All right, Joel, a lot to chew on there. I will start by saying this. Go watch the Saturday Night's Main Events from NBC in the mid-1980s, and you will see that the frivolity, the sports entertainment-y aspect of WWE did predate getting the F out close to 20 years. So this is not that. And by the way, don't blame the WWF. I don't know a lot about the organization. It seems like they do good work, and it's a good cause. Don't blame them. WWF, the World Wrestling Federation, Titan Sports, signed a bad deal, and they didn't foresee international expansion of their branding, and they promised the World Wildlife Fund that they would not market the WWF initials worldwide. And when the internet started and WWF.com became a thing, and they became a much more international company, they reneged on their deal, and they lost a clear-cut lawsuit. They were in the wrong, and that was my interpretation of it. And they, the Wildlife Fund, wasn't happy with the way things were handled, and compromise wasn't in the game. And to be honest, I don't think WWF or World Wrestling Federation. I think they wanted to keep those letters badly, but I don't think they fought hard enough to keep them. I think they should have paid up and done more to make it happen, but. It's one of the great things about, if you're a VIP member, you can go back and read the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter back issues. And if you know the approximate date of when a big story happened, like the name change, you can go into the back issues when you're a VIP member on our VIP ad-free website and look up. And we've got over 1,400 back issues posted from the late 80s through today. And you can read what we wrote at the time that these things happened and really get some of that background that maybe you're missing if you're just reading the bare-bone basics on a Wikipedia page or just have, you know, passing knowledge or something. So I wanted to get that out there first. Joel, he talked about Roman Reigns' push, a TV title, a second women's title, and the need for multiple champions, kind of going against some of the things that you were saying earlier in terms of the overpopulation of belts. Your take on any of those topics?
Let's see. What do I start with here? Let's go with Roman Reigns first. I have written a report on the first episode of the brand split between Raw and SmackDown, and this was coming off of Roman Reigns' wellness policy violation. And the first thing I put in my notes there was that Roman Reigns is still the chosen one. He's still the pick guy, whereas a lot of people were saying, no, they're backing off on him. But no, it's still clear he's the pick guy, and they're just kind of waiting for their moment. You know, they're making him appear like he's not the chosen guy right now by putting the focus on Kevin Owens, the guy that the audience likes, but they're still making a heel. The botched Seth Rollins turn. They're trying to put the focus on other things, but Roman still stays in the mix, trying to make it look like he's not really involved with it. But yes, he is. They're just waiting for the proper moment for him to get back into the title picture. I don't see any sort of heel turn coming anytime soon. They haven't alluded to that whatsoever. Even though he should be turned heel, I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, it's just a matter of time before he becomes back into the title picture. They're just kind of picking their spots and waiting for the moment.
Okay. Anything else from his call that you want to talk about? I mean, you made yourself clear on the titles. I mean, if he was arguing advocating another women's championship, there's already one on each brand. I mean, I could maybe see having a women's tag team championship, although I sort of regret saying that because I feel like it's maybe a bad idea, but I would be more willing to entertain that than another singles title. There's not enough women. It's not a belt right. for everyone. You know, he talked about how, you know, prior brand split, there were so many top stars, you know, it was nice to have two belts so they could each have them. And I look at that era and there's an asterisk in my mind behind every championship reign during the dual championship era, because they weren't really the champions. I mean, how would Golden State Warrior and Cleveland Cavalier fans, I finally got some basketball reference in there, Joel. How would they feel about being co-champions, about if the NBA said, we're doing a brand split, we're going to have the Western Conference champ, we're going to call them the world champ, and we're going to have the Eastern Conference champ, we're going to call them the international or the universal champ or whatever, and or global basketball champion. I mean, just, you know, whatever name. And we're going to have two champions. And then, you know, this year it's a two more teams, and the year after two more teams. You'd look back and be like, but who was the best team? We don't know, because there were two, and it would suck, and nobody would like it. And yet WWE does it because they want to have a world champion on each house show, and they want to have separate brands with the champion on each brand. And I mean, it's a complicated issue. It's not the dumbest thing ever in the sense that there's some positives to having two champions. It's not like just, it's indefensible. But I think the diminishing returns of having two champions is much greater than this idea that everybody gets a participation ribbon who's a main eventer. Everybody gets a world title reign. That's not the way it ever was. Most look at world title histories. Every once in a while, if you look at the history of the NWA world title, there's a token championship reign for somebody. The AWA, Otto Vance basically bought a championship run from Vern Gagne. Jumbo Sheruda got a championship run, and that was kind of a payola type thing. But it, you know, me as a fan watching it, I thought this adds international credibility to the world title. Most of the time, there were a lot of good wrestlers in every company who would never get close to the world title or never have a reign.
Yeah.
And it made the championship lineage more valuable, more important. I mean, if in between tomorrow and inauguration in January, they just decided to let every, like, the most tenured six senators have 6 days as president of the United States, it'd be like, well, it's really cool that, you know, Senator X, Y, and Z get 6 days with the nuclear code and 6 days to make executive orders and 6 days to hit a gavel at a mm-hmm. at a meeting. I mean, but then being president would mean less if they did that every 4 years and let six other people have it. There's the scarcity of championship reigns is needed. It's vital to the championship having drawing power. Now, I feel like there's probably people who work for WWE and have for years in creative whose eyes are glazing over or they're shaking their heads, any sense to them. I also think there's other people on the writing team who are nodding along because they understand wrestling history and believe in it. I mean, I think there's a variety of opinions in WWE, but I think the industry has moved far enough from the Attitude Era, far enough with now we're talking about a second roster split era, that there's people who consider themselves longtime wrestling fans who do not know wrestling history and don't understand that there's another way to do things that makes everything so much easier for them and so much better for us watching. And one of those is not everybody gets a world title reign just because you're a main eventer. So yeah, there's my semi-annual world title rant, Joel. Any follow-up on that before we go to another call? Yeah. I'm interested in your feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say that, not to single out the caller, but a lot of people need to get off this about that these people deserve world title reigns. You know, being a world champion is not meant for everyone. A world champ, you know, having a world championship is whatever's going to draw the most amount of money. And by having like two world champions, that's not the best way to draw the most amount of money. you know, because you want to have one champion who holds it for a long time, and you're just waiting to see, you know, when is this guy going to lose his championship? You know, and then they line up the different contenders, and you're thinking, oh, this is going to be the guy. This is the guy, you know, he retains the title, and then you move on to the next one. But I think if you just have all these championships across Raw and SmackDown, it just completely devalues being the world champion. I mean, like, when I started watching wrestling, I first saw SmackDown in, like, 2005 when Batista was the world heavyweight champion. You know, and it's just kind of like they don't acknowledge the world heavyweight championship anymore. You know, it was just another world championship to put on the other brand. And it's not really acknowledged anymore. And it just kind of devalues it because at the same time, John Cena was the WWE champion on Raw. So I think by just having one champion that can just define that era. I mean, when you think about like different champions that just define the certain era, instead of having two guys at the same time, it just devalues the whole thing. Like you were making the comparison to the NBA, where it's like, well, if you have the champion of this and the champion of the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, you know, and everyone just gets a championship. Like, it just completely devalues the whole idea of just having one single person. And that's the guy who's carrying the brand, he's carrying the championship, headlining the shows. But if you have two people, then it just completely devalues it because you don't have that single star. And I think that was really one of the problems that with Raw now is that, you know, they don't really have that single star. I mean, Kevin Owens is the Universal Champion, but he doesn't maybe this is just my opinion, he doesn't really feel like a world champion. He just kind of feels like another guy who's carrying a belt. Because, you know, that AJ Styles is holding the WWE Championship on SmackDown. So it just completely devalues it by having another world champion under the same umbrella in WWE.
Well put, Joel. Well put. The only – and I'm just trying to be fair here as I was listening to you talk about there being two champions and defining an era. If Raw and SmackDown really stayed separate, if they had real different visions and
which won't
there
happen.
Was – Right, which one? Yeah, I know. These are big ifs, but it could replicate the defining era of the late 80s through the early 90s, where it was Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan, and you had the two champions. Mm-hmm. It's what they wanted to do with Sting. Maybe had a little bit with Goldberg and Steve Austin, although that wasn't really world title oriented. But there have been times where there's been two major companies or two major world titles and eras were defined on two of them with the idea of being a building to a dream match. And I think Vince McMahon wanted to create that. And that was his goal initially, but he just doesn't have the discipline to stick to it because it's just too many temptations. It's like you might wake up on January 1st with a New Year's resolution that you're not going to eat any processed junk food with sugar and salt or processed white flour. And that's great. And you're going to say, I'm going to be a year from now, I'm going to thank myself. That's my new, I know nobody wants to be thinking about New Year's resolutions on November 7th, but, but you know, you're like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to exercise every day and I'm going to not eat any processed junk food with sugar, salt, or white flour. And then you have a stressful day at work and the salad in the fridge that you're going to have is kind of wilted. And you're looking around and there's that, you know, bag of chips or pretzels and you're just, screw it. And you eat it. That's Vince McMahon and the roster split. He has the best of intentions. I'm going to thank myself 3 years from now. I kept the brand separate. We're going to have two champions on different tracks. It's going to, each brand will be defined by the champion. We'll have a mega match at WrestleMania when we need it. But then
I'd love,
you can't, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'd love for Vince McMahon to hear you say that analogy about him. He'd be like, I don't eat potato chips. What are you talking about, Wade?
Yes.
He just would completely miss the whole point.
Because he doesn't believe in vegetables. That's part of the reason. He wants his steak wraps with ketchup. We learned that. We learned that when all the ex WWE writers started doing podcasts and talked about Vince's eating habits. And it's the people who eat only steak and white flour tortilla wraps tend to get diverticulitis because vegetables are kind of good for moving things through the system. So there's Wade Keller's diet tip for the day. All right. let's address the that Undertaker issue before we go too much further. Undertaker announced for SmackDown in a few weeks or a couple weeks. Or actually, is it already next week? Because it's in the lead up to Survivor Series.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because it's the 900th episode, right?
Yep, it's the 900th episode, so that's kind of the excuse for him being there. I was thinking about the Cruiserweight Classic and Undertaker and kind of mixing up the dates of when they debut. So you have Undertaker next week showing up on SmackDown, which they haven't advertised on TV yet. I assume they'll get around to that. Do you think that it's going to be more than just, hey, I'm still here, plant a seed? You know, maybe they plant a seed because I wanted to bring this up with you, Braun Strowman. Are they trying to build up Braun Strowman as a killer monster heel to set up an Undertaker match? Or do you think they have bigger things in mind for Undertaker? Like, I would say, hopefully, like maybe a John Cena epic, you know, battle for the ages between these two icons and have Braun save for, say, Roman Reigns. But, you know, we're getting to that point where we got to start talking about WrestleMania matchups. Undertaker showing up at SmackDown and, by all accounts, looking good at the Cleveland Cavaliers home opener and ring ceremony. I mean, obviously, people thinking this means Taker wrestling is more likely. Your thoughts on that and the odds, as our caller asked, of him maybe even showing up at Survivor Series in some sort of angle, perhaps with Goldberg or Lesnar too.
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, obviously WWE has to be talking with Undertaker about whether or not he thinks he's going to wrestle. And I personally have not heard either way if he says he is going to or not. I'm guessing that Undertaker is going to hold out, you know, to drive a hard bargain going towards getting closer to WrestleMania. I guess my gut would tell me is that there's probably not going to be some big storyline angle that's going to be on SmackDown. I would assume it's probably going to be like, God, I can't remember what it was. A couple of years ago, Undertaker made some return, and he just did a one-off thing with Kane to, you know, chokeslam a bunch of people. And I tend to think that it might just be, you know, that same type deal. You know, I'm still here. I can still do some things, you know, just letting you know that that's still out there. Because I don't think that they've really determined yet exactly what they want to do with Undertaker, because there's so many variables that can happen between now and WrestleMania. I mean, you can lay down the foundation for something going into it, but I think there's too much that can happen between Survivor Series and WrestleMania to really set anything in stone. You know, it'll be interesting to see who he is going to face. I sure hope it's not Braun Strowman, because, you know, every year when WrestleMania comes around, it could be Undertaker's last match. So I just would not like to see Braun Strowman being the last Undertaker match. That I hope they have more faith in that. You know, I would tend to think that if they know for absolute sure that it is going to be Taker's last match, that it is going to be some epic sort of battle with John Cena. And, you know, maybe that does happen, because we've seen a little bit less of John Cena lately. You know, so that could be in the works. But I don't think they're going to really set anything in stone this early. As far as a Survivor Series appearance, you know, it's possible. It really just depends on what he's doing at SmackDown, if they make it some sort of storyline there, or if it's just a one-off thing where he comes in, the gong rings, and he chokeslams a bunch of people. I think it just depends on what they decide to do with him on SmackDown.
We have an email address for the show, so if you ever can't call into the show, or you watch Raw or SmackDown and you don't have time to listen to the show at night, but you want to listen in the morning, but you want a topic or question addressed, a good strategy is to email us then, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's what John T. did, and he said, do you guys think that adding some incentives to the Survivor Series matches would help add some sort of interest to the matches? I was thinking something along the lines of, if you are one of the survivors on the winning team, you gain a bonus in your pay or a future title opportunity. I think this would make the matches more believable and that wrestlers would actually care about the outcome of the match. What do you think about that? Thanks. Joel, I've heard a lot of ideas for stipulations. I don't like all of them. I don't like most of them, but I like the idea, as John says, of giving wrestlers incentive to get along other than trying to protect Stephanie's pride that she drafted better wrestlers than her brother Shane. Because that's the only reason that these bitter enemies rivals who have never shown any interest in cooperating or working together or a common cause. There's nothing that should give them incentive to protect Stephanie McMahon's ego and team together. And I'd say the same, I mean, at least on SmackDown, Shane and Daniel Bryan are portrayed as babyfaces, and so you'd go, well, I can understand the babyfaces on Team SmackDown wanting to fight for them, but why would the heels? It doesn't make sense. So Stephanie tried to cover that base in a way that we criticized almost an hour ago, which is, if you don't succeed, your jobs might be in jeopardy. So that's a hell of a stipulation, but it's very flimsy in the sense that nobody believes anyone's really going to lose their job over their performance in these matches. But at least there's something built in that maybe is giving some of them an incentive to get along so they don't lose their jobs. But of course, that makes them all seem like minimum wage workers who are cowering at a boss who's going to kick them out onto the street with no job recommendation if they don't do what they're told. And last time I checked, people don't like to pay money to watch guys and women and men fight who are treated that way by the boss and aren't portrayed as these outlaws and superstars who are in great demand instead of just fighting pathetically for their jobs each week. So there's a good way to go about this and a bad way to go about this, Joel. Do you have any ideas on what they could do stipulation-wise to make these matches have meaning?
Yeah, that is a tough question. What do they do to give this some more meaning? Because nobody is buying into the whole SmackDown versus Raw pride thing. It's, you know, they've only been split for less than a year. Nobody believes, oh, I'm a Raw guy and I want to defend Raw. And it's like, well, why? Your boss is Stephanie McMahon and she's a jerk and she's threatening to fire you. And that's just WWE's cop-out way to raise the stakes as well. If they don't win, they're going to be fired, and we don't get to see them anymore, so now we want them to win. It's just a ridiculous thing that they always do, and that's what they always result to. Is you're going to be fired, you know, and it just emasculates the wrestlers and, doesn't make them feel like outlaws or feel special at all. So, I mean, it's tough to say what do they do to make it give – to put stakes on the line. And, you know, in the first place, I could just say, well, they shouldn't even have the match. Because I wouldn't have this SmackDown versus Raw for all these different matches because it's just ridiculous. But what do? You can give them a raise or something like that. I don't know if anybody's going to believe that either. I don't know, title match or something. It's hard to say what they're going to do with it, but it's just difficult because no one's buying into this whole concept of the match anyways.
I don't like the idea of having somebody in a 5-on-5 elimination match where it can be chaotic. You can be down 3-1 or 4-1 at no fault of your own, or benefit from a 3-1 or 4-1 setup through no benefit of your own and end up lucking into a title shot. I give a mulligan to the Royal Rumble because it's a very successful concept that people look forward to. It's a protected gimmick. They do it once a year. So I allow for the fluky nature of winning the Rumble as an excuse, as the reason that you earn a WrestleMania world title shot. I think there's no more joke of a way to win it than the way Roman Reigns did, which was practically by accident after napping at ringside for most of the match. But having the Survivor Series be a way that somebody earns a title shot, I'm just not in favor of that. I think you should earn a title shot by winning a one-on-one match. I think the structural foundations are important. What WWE has become in Survivor Series is, I think, the epitome of it, especially tonight with the way they built it up on Raw. And by the way, thumbs up to Raw. If you're going to do the Survivor Series and you're going to have a bunch of multi-person matches, at least make it clear who's wrestling and accentuate the selling points. For better or for worse, we're stuck with these selling points. Can they all get along? And will they fight for the pride of the brand? They played that up, and I don't think there's much doubt if you sat through all 3 hours of Raw, you've got a pretty good idea of what's happening at Survivor Series. So we could be sitting here criticizing them for doing a show that's completely disconnected from the event they're trying to hype a week from Sunday. They get credit for actually focusing on hyping it. So pat on the back for that. Mm-hmm. But if the premise isn't right now, the premise of WWE and Survivor Series or it feels like the inspiration of so much of what they do is things that you would do if you only were a casual fan of wrestling, didn't understand the fundamentals of promoting, didn't know the history of what drew money, and said, how can we make these events stand out from each other? Well, there's a long history of making events stand out from each other, like USC does now, by presenting a fight between two people who fans want to pay to see fight. That's how you draw money. You don't need concepts left and right. The Survivor Series was born not because Vince McMahon thought it would be a great draw on pay-per-view, but because he wanted to do an event that wouldn't hurt house show attendance. So the novelty of pay-per-view, of seeing multi-man matches, maybe would draw on pay-per-view because people who would buy it because pay-per-view was new. But Survivor Series wasn't created because it was like, here's a genius idea that everybody's been waiting for. He didn't want to give away the matches that people actually wanted to pay to see, which were the one-on-one matches. He wanted to protect his house show business by putting a Survivor Series together by having a bunch of five-on-five matches. The Survivor Series was a way to protect the money matches, not create money matches. And here we are in 2016, and it feels like it's born out of not trying to there's not even an awareness that this isn't the best way to do it. Now, granted, this show's going to make it or break it based on Goldberg-Lesnar more than anything. So it has that super fight going for it. And I would say after watching tonight's Raw, and probably after tomorrow night's SmackDown too, it needs it. It needs that Goldberg-Lesnar match to draw interest, because I think this is otherwise very much a take-it-or-leave-it show, except for a slice of the audience who are, as Michael Cole on commentary early in the show, and the announcers are kind of speculating, going, can you imagine if AJ Styles stands opposite of Kevin Owens, or Kevin Owens crosses paths with Dean Ambrose? And it's like, yeah, I guess I have a memory of everything before June, so none of that really is all that amazing. I mean, it's a hard sell this early in the roster split. It's a hard sell conceptually anyway. Flat feeling as far as that goes. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you that, you know, they're stuck with this concept, and at least they acknowledged it. They let you know what's happening at Survivor Series. Like I said, I wouldn't do it in the first place because it just defeats the purpose of splitting the brands, where, you know, down the line, some guys will switch brands. Then you look forward to seeing the new matchups. You know, it just completely defeats that purpose because no one's buying into this brand loyalty, you know, 6 months into the concept. The other thing though, is that, like I was saying, that, you know, trying to put stakes on the line, and I wasn't like advocating for, you know, a title shot or something there, but I'm just saying I don't know what you would do given the circumstances of it, it's just supposed to be Raw versus SmackDown. Like I said, I wouldn't have done it in the first place because I don't know what you would put on the line and what it would be worth it to these people to get together, to work together and actually win the match when they don't even like their boss, and their boss doesn't even like them. So... go ahead.
No, I was going to say, there is that. That's it. That's all I was going to say. Yeah. It's like, wow. Absolutely. All right. Joel, prediction after a week or so of Timberwolves action, are they going to make the playoffs this year based on what you've seen?
It's hard to say at this point. I'm just going to give the easy answer and say that we need to see what happens when Ricky Rubio comes back, because anyone who is on the radio saying that they need to trade Ricky Rubio has no idea what they're talking about, and they don't watch Timberwolves basketball because that guy runs the offense, he runs the plays, and without Ricky Rubio, these people don't really know what they're doing. Sure, Karl-Anthony Towns is going to score a lot of points, and he's going to get a lot of rebounds, but the rest of the offense struggles, and they don't really know what's going on the rest of the game. As far as the bench goes, Tom Thibodeau was disillusioned to believe that he had this great bench and didn't really need to sign anyone because their bench is awful. There's nobody great coming off the bench. Chris Dunn is going to be a good player coming the NBA, but he's not at that point to take over Ricky Rubio's spot. That being said, are they going to make the playoffs? It doesn't look like it right now, but you're going to have to wait and see until Ricky Rubio comes back.
Amen to all of that. Yeah, Ricky, there are stats that have not been invented that are the metrics that add, you know, Ricky Rubio's value, other than the point differential with Ricky on the floor versus not on the floor last year was among the greatest of all point guards in the league. He made one of the biggest differences. And so, yeah, I mean, just because, and by the way, he shot a pretty good, he was actually shooting a little above average for point guards in the starting point guard in the NBA the last 40 games of the season last year, give or take. Somebody can check my stats on that, but it's something close to that. I mean, he was an above average shooter at the end of last year. So I'm with you on that. Okay. Minnesota Vikings, what is their final record this year, Joel? And what were you predicting 3 weeks ago was their final record?
Oh, God. 3 weeks ago, I was really optimistic, thinking that they were going to go 13-3. So I guess that's still possible. That's still out there as a possibility if they go undefeated the rest of the season. But no, I mean, there's just a lot of moving parts in the Vikings system. It's tough to say at this point. I mean, losing to the Bears on Monday Night Football and then losing to the Lions, I mean, it's kind of like, where do these guys win a game now, looking at their schedule going forward? So I don't know. I mean, like, at this point, I think they could go, let's say, 8-8 or 9-7. I mean, at this point, I just don't know how many more games they're going to win. It sure looks like, though, that the Detroit Lions are going to win the NFC North, which would be quite the turn of events, thinking that the Vikings were going to go deep into the playoffs. And now it looks like the Detroit Lions are going to win the division. So who knows what's going on there? I mean, like, losing North Turner, I don't think it's as big of a deal as some people have made it out to be. I think that Pat Shurmur is just going to, you know, take a lot of his offense and then just kind of mold it to his own way and just kind of move things to go a little bit faster there. Obviously, we saw him involve Stephon Diggs a little bit more, and Laquon Treadwell got some receptions. So I think he's going to experiment with some different things, you know, just to try and get things going. But the defense, I don't know where they've gone at all. You know, it's difficult if you're one of those guys on the defense, knowing that your offense is going to really struggle to score some points. So it's going to be difficult to be one of those defensive players, but they also need to step up their game a lot if they're going to start to win some games and look like how they did a couple weeks ago.
Since I know very little about football other than what the record is, and when we win, I assume we're going to win forever, and when we lose, I think we're going to lose forever. I'm just a casual fan in that sense. I can't break down. I mean, I get when the quarterback's getting sacked all the time or can't get a, you know, I get that they don't have a good offensive line and all that. I mean, it's not like I've never watched football, but I can't like break down a lot of the details. So right now I went from thinking they were going to be 16-0 3 weeks ago and we're going to win the Super Bowl and it's going to be great. I am now officially predicting that they're going to end the season 3-13. Now, is that still possible, Joel?
At this point, it's not possible.
But can't they take away two of their wins because they suck so bad for the rest of the year? Because I think they should. I think you shouldn't get to end the way they played the last 3 weeks. I don't think you should get to end 5-11. I think you should have to end 3-13 if you're going to be this bad. I think you should be penalized.
You either got to be really good and win all your games, or you got to be really bad and lose all your games, right? Isn't that how it works? Because then you get the best draft pick, and then you build for the future, or you just win the Super Bowl that year. But
so let's admit we cheated and have two of the wins taken away, so we get a good draft pick. I'm of course being facetious. I'm genuinely believing they're going to go to end the year. I think they're going to go 5-11. So I just want to be realistic. I think they're going to lose the rest of their games. I've watched these last three games. They've been pitiful. I don't think they'll take away any of their wins. But, my God. Oh, and I'll be talking with Jason Paul about this on Wednesday. He's back for the midweek flagship edition of the PW Torch Livecast, 1 Eastern this Wednesday. He may email me ahead of time and say no Vikings talk, and I will honor that. But there's a chance we'll grumble together about that too, because we are all Minnesota based and we're all sports fans of the Minnesota team. So, Joel, great having you on the show again. Go ahead if you had a wrap up point. I was gonna start the sign off here.
I was gonna say, you know, it's about time they're looking to get a new kicker that they're gonna try out a bunch of guys tomorrow, and it appears that they're just gonna, you know, bring in a bunch of free agents and they're gonna find somebody to replace Blair Walsh. That it is the end of Blair Walsh being the Vikings kicker is the way it looks right now.
Boy, the kicker, it's such a mental game. I'm sure there's some actual physical aspects to it too, but poor guy. I mean, I don't like watching I don't take joy in seeing somebody stand out there all alone and let his team down like that. You know, I mean, it's like, it's hard to watch that. And I think Adrian Peterson went up to him, patted him on the shoulder and, you know, that there's some, there's a team camaraderie and all that, but man, you know, just deep down, he knows that they're fuming about him when he costs him a game like that. And granted, there's a million things that happen on the football field that are less obvious that coaches see. And they could probably point to 25 other players doing 25 stupid things that were preventable, other than the inevitable odds that you're going to miss a field goal every once in a while, just by chance. The coaches probably know it wasn't Blair Walsh's fault, but for talk radio and for people who are looking for a scapegoat, he is that. But also the truth is, if you can't be counted on, to kick a clutch kick, as happened last year in the playoffs and now this year, it makes sense for the team with all the millions of dollars and this gorgeous new stadium. You're going to find somebody who maybe can do a better job. It's a business.
Right. I mean, it's between the ears for him, and his confidence is so low that it's irreparable at this point, that they're not going to be able to repair that at all. And, there's something to be said for guys. If you can't kick from behind 40 yards, that's fine. But for a guy who's missing extra points and inside the red zone, I mean, that's just, you can't play in the NFL and expect to have a job when you're missing shots like that. So it's sad to see, because as far as I know, Blair Walsh is a really nice guy, and he does a lot of stuff for the community here. And he had a lot of support even after he missed that field goal from the playoff game. But, it's a business, like you said, and they need to move on and, find somebody else to replace them.
Joel, thanks so much. Great to have you on again. We'll have you on again sometime soon.
Great. Thank you so much, Wade. I always enjoy it, and I appreciate talking with you.
Absolutely. Check out Joel Dennell's reports on Lucha Underground on Wednesday nights. And I mentioned this on the Steve Austin interview last Thursday. We've got a VIP sale going on this month, and the coupon code for getting $8 off your first subscription, your first month subscription, or you can take $8 off any sub, a 3-month or 1-year sub. The coupon code is SURVIVE16. SURVIVE16. That's your coupon code. You enter that on our sign-up form, and you get $8 off. You can experience everything that comes with a VIP membership for a full month for just $2. Why not do it? Do it right now. It takes 2 minutes to sign up, maybe less if you can type fast on your phone. Mobile-friendly sign-up, desktop-friendly sign-up. Go to pwtorch.com/govip. Click on the link to go right to the subscription sign-up form if you're ready to go. If you're not quite convinced yet, or you want to know more about what comes with a VIP membership, because, with so much free stuff out there covering wrestling, why would you pay? Well, that's why we created a subscription sign-up page with a ton of details on what comes with a membership. I dare you to read it and not sign up, because if you listen to this show and you make it this far into the show, you're going to love what we do on the VIP side of things. And also, the archives, our coverage of current stuff that is not here on the live cast or on our free website is massive. And the archives are just, you'll get lost in the archives. I mean, you will be, if you love wrestling and you want to know why things, not just what happened, but why they happened in history, and you want real-time analysis, not 2020 hindsight, but real-time analysis. What did we write the week of the big stories dating back to the late 1980s? Going VIP is a way to go, is a way to get lost in our archives. We've got over 1,400 back issues dating back to the late 1980s of covering every major story. I think you'll every major pay-per-view, every major match, my star rating, my match analysis, columns from Bruce Mitchell going back to 1990, so much more. Yes, our audio shows, our VIP ad-free audio shows, ad-free versions of this, along with a ton of other VIP exclusive audio shows. On average, over 50 other VIP audio shows per month, post pay-per-view roundtables and other. Other current long-form shows with top-shelf staff. They are all available when you sign up VIP on popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android and iTunes, or you can stream them right from our mobile-friendly site, or stream or download them right from your laptop or desktop computer. So we got you covered on all the technology. $2 gets you a full month. That's $8 off. The coupon code is SURVIVE16. Now, one of the other great things about a VIP membership is the retro radio shows. Every Thursday night, we put up a new retro radio show. We're in the early 1990s right now. In fact, we're in early 1992. The John Arezzi Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show and Jim Valley's Attitude Era Total Chaos Radio. Every Thursday night, one of those retro radio shows goes up. These have not been heard since they originally aired on the radio in the 1990s, and in the case of Jim Valley's show, the very early 2000s. And we have hundreds more to go to put up. So, and when you sign up, there's over 100 retro radio shows already available to you, but we put a new one up every Thursday night on our RSS feed. And, the latest one that went up, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight show from March, 1992 included, Dave Meltzer, Bruno Sammartino, Superstar Billy Graham, and Barry Orton, three of them in studio. I think Bruno was on phone talking about the scandals in the WWF at the time. And if this is a story you don't know about, 'cause certainly WWF doesn't celebrate it, you're going to your jaw is going to be dropped at the things that were going on that were being talked about on the Donahue show and in major metropolitan and national newspapers and on radio shows like this, in syndicated tabloid TV shows, sex scandals, drug scandals, and really crazy stuff. That it'll sound crazy if you're not familiar with it. A fascinating episode. It was on the eve of some of those people on that show doing the Donahue show. That's why they were in New York for that radio show. And John Arezzi had him in studio to talk about all of it. You can read all about this too, and how a lot of these things turned out, which allegations had credibility, which ones ended up not coming through as having evidence to back up the claims. All of that's available also in the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter back issues I spoke of. So let me give you a reminder of where to go, what the password is, and then I'll tell you more about VIP with our closing commercial spot here. So pwtorch.com/govip, and then enter coupon code SURVIVE16, all one word, SURVIVE and the number 16, and you get $8 off. A $10 order, $8 off a 3-month or 1-year subscription too. Check it out. Here's more details on those retro radio shows I just talked about. As a PW Torch Livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday morning wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. This is